It's the Mac Show, yes. We're here to discuss the week in Macintosh and all the things that have gone on. And there's been a bit of news this week. Quite interesting stuff to start us off with. But joining me, who are going to take me through it all, I've got... I thought we had Mac royalty last week, but this week, even more so. Top left, last time you'll be joining us for a while, I take it, Chris Breen.
Yeah, I'm still Chris Breen, private citizen, for another 7 days or 9 days or 11 days or something. Anyway, March 9th, when they're holding an Apple event, they're apparently holding an Apple event for me as well, in that I'm going to go work at Apple on March 9th. So, I disappear as of March 9th.
So your lips will formally then on that day be stitched shut.
Yeah. And so far, Apple hasn't told me what I can and can't say. So generally, they may be a little stitched today because I don't want people thinking I'm speculating about something I know anything about, because I don't.
We need to do a disclaimer right at the start. Chris knows absolutely nothing about what's going on the inside of Apple.
Nor have I ever. And likely by the time I work there, I won't either.
Which is why he's an Apple journalist.
Mm-hmm.
But can you tell us what it is that you're going to do?
No.
You're not allowed.
Again, they haven't said yes or no, but I know they're generally kind of secret about all this stuff. The only hint I will offer is that if you've paid any attention to what I've done over the last 20 some odd years, what I'm doing at Apple would not surprise anybody.
Right. Playing the piano then?
Yep.
Good lad. You're going to be in the lobby, aren't you?
Yeah, they're kind of, well, over here we have these department stores called Nordstrom where maybe they still have pianos. I don't know. But yeah, that's what I'll be doing is you walk into Apple. There I'll be in my tuxedo playing your favorite hits from the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
So that's it. There's going to be a complete redecoration of the staff canteen, and you're going to be the lounge lizard in the corner.
That's exactly what this March 9th event is all about.
Play really. Misty for me. There we go.
So instead of John Mayer at the end, it'll be you who does a song or two?
Yeah, I'm actually going to open as people come in, and there'll be sort of, with a residence-like eyeball head on my shoulders, and then playing the piano. And at the end, the big reveal is, well, maybe I have too much.
Well, you got to say, actually, yeah. the amount of adversity, publicity and stuff like that that the Mac All-Star Band have got for Apple, they could let you do a keynote.
I think that's fair.
That's job one for you then, Chris.
I'll mention that to them when I get over it.
Yeah, so anyway, look, before we talk about salary, Mac All-Star Band, right? next to him, it's that bloke who's been away and now he's come back. And did you have a nice holiday, dude?
I did.
Where did you go?
King's Cross.
What?
In Florida.
Looking for a young lady for the night. Because that's what King's Cross is
platform
for.
Platform 9 3/4. I went to Orlando.
And did you do the whole Disney thingy, or was it more...
No, we did Harry Potter. Come on.
All right, okay, fair enough.
It went to Hogwarts.
That other great American institution.
Yes.
And it was awesome.
Excellent. You got
Diagon Alley.
Did you get any rain while you were over there?
Yeah, a little bit. Oh, I also... did a presentation at NASA.
What?
Wow. Yeah. Talk about daunting walking into a room of, actual rocket scientists who talk to them about stuff, right?
What did you talk about?
To teach them stuff. Huh?
What did you talk to them about?
I did a little workflow talk. So we did some Automator. We did some workflow on iOS. That sort of stuff.
Oh, excellent. Automator's cool. I love Automator. Yeah. I'm not very good at it, but I'm not an idiot at it like I am with everything else.
Yeah, so that was fun. That was awesome. And then I got to stand on, launch pads and things like that for like the Apollo 1 and just be in awe of, all the things we'd accomplished, and then sad about the fact that we're not going to the moon, but I guess we're going to go back at some point here soon. Well, relatively soon for us, I guess. So,
Chris Eschweiler sent me Apollo mission patches from a trip that he had out there, and I was over the moon with that, let alone standing on any of the sodding pads or anything like that.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I get to go into the bunkhouse where you know Alan Shepard sat on top of the original, you know, Gemini and Mercury missions, all that fun stuff. So it was great. It was a great trip.
Good trip. I wouldn't swear. We did go to Johnson Space Center, but it wasn't quite the same. Well, that was cool. Beneath him, Chuck the Tornis. Oh, there we go. How you doing, pal? I haven't seen you for a while.
No. I was very pleased and a little surprised that you had me back. So I guess I didn't blow it too much last time.
Well, no, you missed last week's show because we moved the date because it was my wife's birthday on the Friday. And actually, based on some of the correspondence I've had this week, that might be a good thing. We'll talk about that in a minute. Have you been well, sir?
Very well. Very well. Thank you. Keeping busy. I've been doing most of my work these days for Macworld until my boss just left to take another job. So we'll see how that continues, but I'm having fun over there. It's a great megaphone to have and something that I had always wanted to do. So I'm really, really happy that I'm able to contribute a little bit over there now that everybody else is gone.
Type your boots off. And then last but by no means least, Josh Centers. How are you doing, old pal?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
First time on the network, though.
Yeah. I feel a little bit out of my depth because we got a guy who just got in talking about spaceships, another guy who's about to enter a spaceship. So.
True. Oh, yeah, of course. Chris, you'll be presiding over the new building then. Chris Breen,
I will be playing the piano in the center of the donut.
The whole thing rotates around.
Yeah, it's kind of a dining experience. So being kind of an elevated platform sort of thing. They have had Elton John there, who was the beta tester, and then got it ready for me.
Excellent.
It's a space needle without the needle part. Right?
Elton John, Chris Breen's warm-up man.
Exactly.
We have a title. last week, we had a show, which I've got to say, I thought was quite a good show. We had a really good time, plenty of joshing around and having fun, and which is what we bet. And we got a few letters of complaint.
A few,
yeah. There was cries of homophobia from people, which I've got to put that one straight down, because there are no homophobics on this network at all, and if there ever was, they would be unplugged in a heartbeat and sent away, because I am not having that kind of crap. There's no misogynists, there's no anything else around here. No ists allowed on the network. And a few of us said that the podcast was cringeworthy, but I kind of say, if you think it was, you don't get us. We are the bedrock of this whole network is about taking the piss. If you ever listen to us and think we're a serious news show, you really haven't got it. Okay? We're not. We come, we chat, we have some fun. And a bit of taking the piss out of people is part of that. And if you don't like it, I'm sorry your mother beat you, but just move along, eh? There's good fellows. And we had an email. Thank you, Mark Green. He's put in brackets, no relation, afterwards. Dear Ewan, I'm writing with reference to this week's Mac show to say how appalled I am at the content. The subject under discussion at the beginning of the show was totally inappropriate and offensive in the extreme. I have to say that I thought in this modern era we'd moved away from such discussions and the hints of what was clearly not a better past. I had hoped that as a global community, never more so than with the British Tech Network, we were focused on the future and could set behind us a past that was this abhorrent. I'd appreciate it if in future Mr. Green could keep control of himself and avoid the intolerable and unnecessary forays into the world of BlackBerry. I feel the least you could do, Ewan, is bleep BlackBerry any time he makes such a comment. Regards, Mark Green, listener hanging by a thread. He says, cheers, Mark. There you go. We promise that we will try and take the piss out of everyone equally, as Batwint says, and also avoid mentioning BlackBerry in future, because Greeny is in love with his BlackBerry. Oh, man alive.
Which one?
Well, he's got a passport, hasn't he? And he just thinks it's the best thing since sliced bread. It's just... Greeny's not well up with the news, as we found out on another front last week. However, he loves his BlackBerry, and he's gone over to Google now. He's in the dark side. Lord Sith, that's what he is. Greeny of the Sith. no question. The week in Mac. Now, we've got the obvious thing, which is the ninth event, but I'll come back to that in a second. The one I thought we could start off with is the Smart Flash story, because Smart Flash have won $500 million off Apple for patent infringements. And I quite like the fact, I'm going to quote this because it's a really good statement. They filed a complaint to address products that have come out too far in the last proceedings to have been included in Smart Flash's attorney, blah, 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 blah. And a diligent jury has rejected these arguments. But there's been a statement from Apple that says Smart Flash makes no products, has no employees, creates no jobs, has no US presence, and is exploiting our patent system to seek royalties for technology Apple has invented, said Kirsten Huggett, Apple spokesman. We refuse to pay off this company for the ideas of employees spent years innovating, and unfortunately we've been left with no choice but to take this fight up through the court system. And I want to say, huzzah Apple. Absolutely brilliant. Well done. Because that's exactly the crux of what's going on, is no products, no employees, no jobs, no US presence, and is exploiting the patent system. I mean, is this case something that, because I mean, Apple's got a good ear at the moment, hasn't it, politically? Is this something that could help change the system? If you don't want to comment on this, Chris, then I understand, but I think it's a positive. Anyone?
Well, I'm glad a company as large as Apple is choosing to fight these trolls instead of just paying them off, because somebody has to fight them, right? And you know, the little guys just don't have the resources to do so. So I applaud Apple for doing what they can. I don't know how much good it'll do until, you know, there's like a serious lobbying effort started to get some kind of patent reform, because something has to be done. The situation here in the U.S. with patents, especially in West Texas, where most of these patent suits are filed, it's just ridiculous. And I mean, some people argue, I would argue, that patents should just be done away with. But at the very least, we need to have some kind of rule where you need to actually be doing something with a patent before you just go suing everybody. I don't think it's right that these companies just buy these patents and hold on to them and do nothing, but just keep other people from producing things. That's not good for the world.
I would say generally that if you have the opportunity, you ought to take some time to come to Texas and bring with you a shovel and then just kind of dig along the border along the north. And so you've got a very deep trench, and then shove it southward so that it floats off somewhere and becomes its own country. Because honestly, that's what it is. I think anytime you see a lawsuit filed in East Texas or West Texas, it should just automatically be thrown out, because clearly they're going there for one reason only, and that's to take advantage of outlaw justice and waste everybody's time and end up suing a lot of people that probably shouldn't be sued.
Are you saying it's the patent Wild West?
It is. Yeah. I mean, there's entire office buildings out there full of these companies where you go and there's nobody there. It's just an empty office. It's an address so that they can't bring these lawsuits in that region.
It's like a patent Tora Bora.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy out there. So I'm with Josh. You know, it's great to see Apple standing up to them. But, you know, to answer your question, is it going to make any difference? Probably not until, just like Josh said, there's some deeper changes in the system. And maybe Apple will be the one to sort of spearhead that. So I guess from that standpoint, that's a good thing, because it would be much easier for them to just pay these guys off, and that's what they're all hoping for, right?
Right.
A lot cheaper, take a lot less time, they just go away. I mean, but it doesn't do anything to change the problem, really.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it is Apple that kind of leads the charge on this, because there aren't very many companies other than Apple who could do something like this. You're absolutely right, Adam, that, you know, these patent trolls count on the fact that most companies are going to say it's cheaper and it's easier just to settle rather than go through prolonged court battles. And Apple is taking a stand that they're going to fight it, you know, and I think they're willing to fight it even if it costs them more than the settlement might have, or even if it costs them more than what the judgment might have been on this. So I think they're willing to put their money behind this. And, you know, luckily they have tons of money to do it. You know, I think that patents have their place. You know, there are some companies who, you know, bet the bank on new innovations, and they deserve protection for it. But these clearly, you know, these patent trolls are clearly not what the patent system was designed to do. And you're right, it's it's got to come to a head now, and I hope Apple is the one who does it. I hope they make it so distasteful and so costly for these patent trolls to do it that they either drive them out of business or convince them that it's not worth the effort to continue this policy.
I mean, I think that, you know, Apple's got a few patents itself where it's kind of fairly obvious. Amazon have registered one in the last week that's a 3D printer mounted in the back of a truck. And you kind of like, well, that's how it got delivered. So isn't that prior art? You're like, it's okay. At least show me a truck and a printer that's lodged in it that's got, you know, a formulation of how it's going to operate as a working entity and what it's going to produce, etc. And that's the thing. I mean, being cynical, there is an awful lot of benefit to Apple fighting and championing this as well, though, isn't there, from other people who would then, they would gain access over patents and they would get technology that they could move forwards. Chris, you definitely don't want to get involved in that one, but you know, there's a fringe benefit here for Apple fighting this kind of stuff as well as. It's not just stopping about the 500 million, it's about, well, if we stop this 500 million, there's another couple of billion in patents that we won't get hammered for from maybe even more serious contenders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where the law and, you know, modern times and things like that have served to change the intent. I mean, patents were there to protect people's ideas, and now with all the lawsuits and the things that have been going on, it's been convoluted and completely flipped around to be the exact opposite in many cases. You know, where it's just inhibiting anybody even wanting to or being able to have their ideas protected. If you're a small guy, I mean, God, you have no hope, right? If right. one of these patent trolls come after you. I mean, at least Apple can do something about it. But if I had an idea and, you know, somebody had been sitting on this patent that they bought, doing nothing with it and, you know, not innovating, not pushing anything forward, you know, you have no opportunity to come into a marketplace and do anything different. And I think we've talked about this on the show in the past. You know, I was able to be involved in doing a couple patents when I worked for Upper Deck, the trading card company. And, you know, big part of we sat down with the lawyers was broadening our patent to the point where it was covering things that we may or may not be able to do. I mean, to the point where there was some language in there that would protect any kind of future ideas of, you know, we would say, well, this technology may be able to be applied in this way, you know, if the technology ever exists, sorts of things, right? And that was all about creating a patent that, you know, would cover every implementation for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, patents exist to protect people so that they can produce and market innovative products. Patents right. should not be the product, and that's where we are right now.
Oh, that's a good yeah. point. That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, they are the product, definitely.
Well, part of the problem with the patents is that it takes money to enforce them. So if you're a little guy and you have a legitimate patent, but let's say Apple takes your idea, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to, you know, fight the Apple Leviathan? You know, probably not very well, not successfully.
Yeah, no, good point as well. Yeah.
And there has been some of that. Sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that because Ericsson have... had a filing as well, haven't they? Apple have refused a licensing deal with Ericsson for the LTE technologies, and they're seeking $250 million to $750 million in royalties per year from Apple to continue the existing license agreement. And you do feel some sympathy a bit more with Ericsson because at least they've built something, and at least they've used that technology that they are indeed. They've had an expenditure to create the technology.
Yeah. Well, how many examples have we seen recently where a company will be bought not for its products, but just so that the next company can have access to its patent portfolio?
Yeah. I mean, right. BlackBerry, sorry to mention BlackBerry after everything that we just had in that email, but BlackBerry's value is in its patents, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyone else? Or we're going to finish slagging off patents.
I think you can only end it there because it's such a mess. It's a mess. And I don't know that anybody has offered a really great solution yet.
Bookery says in the chat room, I remember Ericsson phones. Weren't they analog? I don't know. The last Ericsson phone I was a T61, and that goes back to about 2002, perhaps. So... I don't know any other. I can't remember any. I haven't seen Sony Ericsson. Oh, it's Sony Ericsson, wasn't it? And it's maybe just
Sony Ericsson.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And Muller Bike is putting links in the chat room. I am not clicking your links anymore, young man. They take me to places that I don't want in my history. Thanks very much. Spring forward, Apple Watch coming. Of course, the time thing, time shift, spring forward, fall back. So it's perfect time to launch a watch. And there's a whole load of other stuff going on, isn't there? Because I want to talk about... Go on, Adam.
Sorry, I'm just laughing because I'm thinking about all the issues Apple has had with daylight savings time. And to me, it would be not the right time for them to launch a watch.
Good point. I just want to know if I can use Chris's Apple discount to buy mine.
Will Apple end up starting it an hour early?
Exactly.
maybe a lot of the journalists won't show up because they set their alarms on their iPhones and they overslept and missed their flight. So,
yeah. No, it's not actually on the week that any time changes, is it? Which would be quite a chuckle. Or is it that weekend?
It's the day after, isn't it?
Ninth.
It's the Monday after daylight savings time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's when we get really screwed up on here because we don't change until the end of March, and you guys, you've got a two-week shift, so there's 4 weeks a year where people don't show up to shows and all sorts. So, and it's not Apple's fault. I just want to clear that up.
They should be lobbying for that change. That's what I want to see Apple lobby for.
What, no,
stupid daylight savings time thing.
And they're interested in that is because that way iOS won't completely screw up twice a year.
Right.
What was that that system for internet time? Was it like Swatch Time or something? Yeah. Where it was like an at symbol and then like a number? Do you guys remember the watches that had that? Maybe Apple should back up, reinvent time itself.
Yeah, now there's a question here about Sony Ericsson being digital mobile phones being overpriced with a virtually indecipherable OS.
Yeah,
it was okay, but I remember didn't Ericsson create Snake?
The game on the phone,
game, the Snake game, because that was all over. So that was all over Ericsson phones.
The Snake game's way older than that. I saw implementations of that from like the 80s.
Yeah, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, so spring forward, we're going to get an Apple Watch, and we're probably going to get an iOS and OS 10 beta as well, public beta, which is a bit of a first. So what's the watch then? Have they solved all the problems? Is it going to be completely waterproof?
Apparently you can shower with it.
Ooh, is it that good?
Well, Tim Cook does, but I guess he doesn't really have a problem of replacing his if they get wet.
Yeah. He has a whole box full of them in his bathroom. Yeah. You would hope you'd be able to shower with it, because, I mean, while you're out jogging and it starts to rain, and you just get soaked. I mean, you wouldn't want your watch to fry, you know, just out in a, you know, in a rainstorm. So, you know, and this is, you know, the lowest model would be the sport model. I mean, presumably you'd be able to do some kind of sports with it, right? So, yeah, I mean, I would hope it'd at least be shower resistant.
I think the one of the problems that you get with electronic devices in the rain is not necessarily the rain itself. If you actually held the device out in the pouring rain, it would be fine. The problem is you have it next to your clothing, and the clothing gets absolutely saturated, and then it wicks into the device far easier. I know I've wrecked my iPhone 6 by having it my Nokia 1020 by having it in my pocket. And whilst it was protected from the dapples of the rain, all the water got into it because of the... And if you think about your cuff, you know, there's also, you use a lot of expanding material around your cuffs, don't you, which absorbs a tremendous amount of water, you know, the elasticated thing. So I think that could be a real issue for them. I don't think showerproof is enough. I think they've got to make it, you know, three atmospheres or something.
I definitely need some sort of resistance, because, I mean, you know, unlike a phone that you can just cram into a pocket or a purse, you know, you don't... I don't really want that with a watch.
No. Kelly is suggesting that Apple's event is that they are going to eliminate daylight savings.
Swatch internet time. I'm kind of curious if we'll see photos for Mac at the event, because I understand that the whole iCloud photo library thing is supposed to tie into the watch, right? So, like, watch will be able to... You'll be able to see all your photos on there. So it would make a certain amount of sense that you would see photos for Mac finally pop up. And it'd be the right time frame for it, right? Because we're expecting it sometime in the spring. Firstly, I'm hoping for a new Apple TV. I'm always hoping for a new Apple TV, though. But Tim Cook has said on a couple of occasions that he uses his Apple Watch as Apple TV. And to me, it makes sense, you know, alongside the Apple Watch to come out with a new one. But I'm not holding my breath. That's just wishful thinking.
Well, I mean, the Apple TV is long overdue some kind of upgrade, isn't it? I mean, it's I've got to say, in comparison to the Fire, the Amazon Fire TV that I've got, it's a very lackluster UI experience. Yeah, great.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a guy who used to work for Macworld who had some really interesting ideas on the Apple TV, and I think they were well thought out and may start to be realized. He had said that he thought that the TV was being held up until the watch was ready, and that and HomeKit and a lot of different things, and that the Apple TV would sort of become the hub for this, for all these new technologies, and have a new elevated place in the Apple ecosystem. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And I don't know if anybody else on the panel wants to elaborate on that.
Wow, yeah, I think I remember that guy. I just wanted to say that I do have my hand up Chuck's back. operating his jaw, so he says things. No, and I can, again, with the caveat that I know nothing.
Yeah.
Some time ago, I did speculate that the new Apple TV was really a lot about HomeKit and a HomeKit hub. Primarily the reason being that if you have a bunch of smart devices in your home, say from 20 different manufacturers, do you really want to, one, manage everything from a separate app? And also, do you want those 20 companies to all know what the other devices are doing and share that information out? If you have a HomeKit hub via the Apple TV, because it's always on and it doesn't use a lot of power, you then have the option to protect your privacy more, because then Apple can hash that information, send it out to the manufacturers in sort of an anonymized form, so that you're not sharing with the world everything that's going on in your house, because you feel like that's your castle. Then if the watch is a trigger, because one, I think it serves a couple of purposes. One, it's a terminal, in that it's a terminal for your phone, and so relays information between the phone and watch, but also that it acts as a location trigger, so that when you're in your home walking around with it, it can trigger HomeKit intelligent devices. So you walk into a room, the lights come on, or you go into the living room and the fireplace comes on, or the champagne gets colder when you walk in the front door. So I think that was the theory why maybe they would hold the Apple TV until the watch was out, to make that whole home ecosystem complete, rather than saying, oh, we have this watch, and then 6 months later they say, oh, and now we're going to do something more interesting with the Apple TV. That makes for a huge event. And I don't even know if iOS is ready to support it yet, but that was kind of my thinking along those lines.
Well, I mean, I think there's what adds credence to that kind of thought process is the fact that Pebble had their announcement this week for their Kickstarter for their new color e-paper. And to say it went well really kind of doesn't cover it. I don't know that they'll ever fulfill the order stream that they've got, perhaps, for this device. There's a question that you are this close to an Apple launch, and yet you buy a device which is Apple only-ish in the Pebble, and all it's going to do is tell time and a few other little tricks. And I just wondered if, I don't know what that says about the Apple Watch, or what it says about where the Apple Watch has got to go, because if it doesn't do the things that Chris says, it's an also-ran in the side of the I don't know, the Pebble. It's just,
I think right now, I think buying a Pebble at this juncture is sort of like seeing the NES, the Nintendo Entertainment System, and then running out to buy an Atari. You know, I'm a little down on the whole smartwatch thing. I haven't really been convinced by it yet, but I don't see why, if you're in the Apple ecosystem, why you'd buy anything but an Apple Watch at this point. And, you know, I've seen compelling cases for the Pebble, but it has such limited integration that it kind of, to me, it seems to erect more barriers than it lowers, right?
Well, my only thought process with the Pebble is maybe people actually just want it to tell the time.
Why not just buy a watch then?
No, they like the. I like, because I've got a Pebble watch, and the thing I like about it is the fact that when I'm out on a, I don't wear it day to day, and I certainly don't wear it when I'm using a computer. But if I'm going out somewhere where I don't want to be pulling my phone out of my pocket, where I run the risk of dropping it, like on a railway line or, you know, a factory floor or something like that, then I love having my Pebble on because it buzzes and I can see who's calling, I can see what the notification is, and I can see, you know, don't take your phone out of your pocket unless it really is necessary. And I love that element of it. Heart rate, well, yeah, okay, that'd be nice. But when it comes down to it, you know, that kind of just that tiny interaction really has capped it for me. And I'm not convinced on the smartwatch idea. But if it's going to do what Chris says and it's going to allow me to control my Apple TV and it's going to allow, and there's going to be proximity so that when I'm wearing my watch and I turn up next to my computer, the computer doesn't require a password or something that's secure but not, then I like that idea.
Yeah.
That's what makes it more appealing than Pebble.
You know, sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm cutting someone off. I have a Pebble as well, and I like the Pebble a lot too. And I thought kind of the same thing, you know, with Pebble announcing this new color one, you know, and the Apple Watch just, you know, a month away or less, I guess, a few weeks away now, that, you know, why would anybody want to buy a Pebble? But I like my Pebble a lot. I like the notification stuff. The app ecosystem has gotten pretty good. Mm-hmm. I would say the integration with iOS is decent, if not a little bit better than that. And I think the thing is the Apple Watch, you know, we're talking a starting price point of $349 and a 24-hour battery life, which is fine. But with a Pebble, I think even the new color one, I want to say, is it $159, the starting price point for that? Maybe you remember.
The Kickstarter price is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the Kickstarter price is $159. So you're at $150, you've got 5 to 7 day battery life, and it's just a different device with a different market. So I think there's going to be a bunch of people that want some of the Apple Watch-like features, like notifications. My Pebble, there's a Misfit app for it. So if anybody's familiar with the Misfit Shine fitness tracker, you can actually use your Pebble Watch as the tracker portion and integrate with the Misfit software, which integrates with HealthKit. So, I mean, it's kind of going to be like the poor man's Apple Watch, I guess. You know, not to put it in, I don't know if I want to put it in that light, but you know, it's a cheaper entry point into smartwatches, and it's a nice bit of technology. So, not to take anything away from Pebble, you know, I'm going to be moving to an Apple Watch, but it may just not be for everyone. So.
And don't forget, you have a whole other wrist for the Apple Watch to go on.
Exactly. You can wear as both. Well as. Now, the only other thing I want to say is, why the heck is Pebble Kickstartering this thing?
Yeah,
like, do they not have the money now to, like, do this on their own? I was a little miffed about that. I mean, I get that it's where their roots were and there's some nostalgia there, but come on. You know, Kickstarter to me is a place for people who are trying to get something up and running and, you know, not a place to, you know, be your pre-order system for, you know, your larger company. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
But there's a lot of companies
I think that's
that.
A pure marketing ploy. I mean, look at all the attention it's gotten.
Mm. Yeah.
I think it's pretty genius because, I mean, instead of, you know, putting a product that you're not sure if people will want, you just, you know, you design it, you show it off to people and say, hey, do you want this? Well, pony up. And it's been a huge hit so far. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. And, you know, and the kind of my standard response, a lot of people have been complaining about this, but I'm like, well, don't give them money then.
True.
Well, the only thing that I can think, and this is me being cynical again, I talked to Paul Wheatley last week on Twitter, and he said, he described my default state as grumpy. So I've been working this week to not be grumpy, but here I am coming out with all the cynical points today. Being cynical, I think a lot of companies established companies that should be doing product development and sales independently. Yes, there's a social media kind of PR bit to it, but I think it de-risks projects for them.
Sure, yeah.
Because they've done some basic R&D. Okay, that's fine. With this close to an Apple launch, if we put this out as a Kickstarter and everyone goes, holy moly, and dives in, then we know we should go ahead with production because, you know, we've got those pre-orders in there to get us going. And we know it's going to be a fairly good hit against Apple because, you know, we're this close to an Apple launch. So, and I think the bags one that Doc Keeks mentioned about, when he first mentioned that one, you know, it was a Kickstarter for the new style bag. And you're like, no, that's not what it's for. But it is. I think it's just pure de-risking. What if we make something and it doesn't sell?
I really wish they'd do almost all products, at least tech products, this way. Can you imagine, you know, if Microsoft had tried to kickstart Windows 8? See, they could have found out it was terrible a long time ago.
Well, also, it gives them a... It means that they can move very quickly on in terms of timing about releasing a product, or at least announcing a product. So we know that the Apple Watch is coming. There's no secret that that's coming. They may have just picked their spot and said, well, let's launch the Kickstarter campaign on day X, which is 10 days before that Apple's probably going to unleash this thing, or at least do the second showing of it. And that's great PR. It doesn't cost them anything, really. You know, just flipping a switch to do it, rather than having to ramp up an entire marketing campaign as all the Android watches had to do, four or 5 months ago.
And they get the money before Apple does.
I think we saw that rash of smartwatches when Apple indicated that it was going to do a watch, and everybody was rushing out to try to get theirs in before the Apple Watch hit, because I think many of us think that once Apple Watch hits, everybody else is going to be also ran. Doesn't matter whether they were hitting 6 months before or not. Apple has that kind of power that they can wipe the competition simply by releasing a product.
Right. And I think Pebble's being smart in this case in trying, because if I were running Pebble right now, it wouldn't be a question of how we're going to compete with Apple Watch. It'd probably be more a question of how long can we stay in business with an Apple Watch in the world. Now, I mean, maybe they carve out a niche for themselves, but that's the way I would be thinking. So, you know, kickstarting a watch soon before the Apple Watch comes out, to me, makes a ton of sense, because then, you know, you're extending your business as long as possible, because, you know, you have all that Kickstarter money coming in. If Scooter was locked in for a while, maybe it gives you a little more longevity, and maybe it gives you enough time to carve out a niche against the Apple Watch. So,
I think they're doing basically an iPod Nano before the market's established, mm-hmm. so that at least they say, okay, we've got the lower ender. So if an Apple Watch is too dear for you, we're here, ready for you. Come on, come and get it. But it may not, even at $349, depending on what this thing ends up doing. And then there may not be much there at the bottom if the Apple Watch does things, does a significant number of things that that Pebble can't, particularly with so many people walking around with iPhones.
They're going to be able to leverage the Apple marketing halo effect, you know, I think, because there's going to be such a buzz about smartwatches again when the Apple Watch hits, especially in mainstream media, that there's going to be a lot of people that, you know, maybe aren't that into tech and kind of have heard a little bit about smartwatches coming but don't know a lot, and then are going to be suddenly bombarded. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a lot of those people aren't Apple people or Android people, or maybe they're other people, and they'd rather spend that lower price point to kind of get in and figure out what that is. So I think it's Josh, also you're right. I mean, they're going to be able to sort of expand their market. For how long is definitely a question. But, and, you know, they're going to get a bump. And I think their timing right for what they're doing.
Yeah, it also has Apple Pay in it. And, you know, part of me thinks that maybe that's going to be a little bit of a Trojan horse, because now it's going to give access to Apple Pay to all the iPhone 5 and 5S owners out there. And there's still, a whole lot of those people.
Yeah, no, there is. And I think I thought about Apple Pay last week when we were talking about Touch ID coming on Macs. Afterwards, I thought to myself, Apple have got to do that, because otherwise, where's the attraction to pull me away from Amazon, or where's the attraction for me online? You've only got the mobile purchasing experience where the thumbprint and Apple Play really helped. It's got to go onto the desktop. Otherwise, there's a significant amount of desktop sales there that Apple are just going to end up walking away from. It's not, for me, that's not a rumor anymore. That must happen. I can't see how that cannot happen if Apple is going to make Apple Pay work.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Apple Pay didn't come to the web at some point, because, and this has kind of been an overlooked feature of Apple Pay, but the ability to download an app from a store that you've never purchased from before and be able to make a purchase from them within seconds without giving them any personal information is amazing. When I tested Apple Pay for my article on Tidbits, I download the Target app. I don't have a Target account. I mean, I purchased stuff from them, you know, in real life, but never online. And I ordered some paper towels. It took, you know, 3 minutes maybe in total, including the time to download the app. So that's pretty amazing. And that could change a lot of things if it were to come to the web.
I think it will. the one thing I hate about online purchases, which makes me go back to Amazon all the time, is if you want me to sit and type my name, my address, my postcode, my phone number, my email, and enter a password and that kind of stuff, I'm kind of like, oh, is it really worth it? Whereas Amazon, it's one-click purchase. And PayPal, I love PayPal because PayPal, as soon as you pay with PayPal, you don't have to sit and type your physical address out. Mm-hmm. Sod off.
Yeah.
And I know there's predictables and stuff like that, but it's still, the fields get screwed up.
Yep. Yep. I use 1Password for that a lot, and just knowing how much easier that makes it for me makes me fear for how much Apple Pay is going to cost me when it comes to the web.
It is. I mean, Amazon is the blight. I mean, Sharon says that she knows how much business we're turning over, and Paul Wheatley's echoed this as well with his missus. How's the turnover of the business doing? And she said, I don't need to ask. I just gauge the flow of Amazon parcels.
Yeah, if I were Amazon, I'd be a little concerned, and I'd be working on an alternative to Apple Pay because, as you pointed out, I go to Amazon for just about anything, regardless of price and even sometimes availability, just because of that frictionless experience. It takes no time to order something from Amazon, and Apple Pay can bring that to the entire web. So that could be a game changer if Apple does it right, if they get enough support, and if they make it ubiquitous enough.
Going back to the watch, though, I think the one thing that I want to see Tim Cook do, and I think I'm probably one of the harder sales for the Apple Watch. What's Tim going to say that's going to make me want to go, yeah, God, I want to get that tomorrow? And I think he's got to give some assurances that the Apple Watch is a smart watch rather than just a smarter than the competition watch. It's something where he's got to say, it is going to do all of these things. It is going to wow you. Yes, okay, version 1 comes out, and at the moment it won't do that. But without having to get version 2, version 1 will still be able to expand, and we'll still have these add-on features, and there'll be an SDK that will help developers do this. And then you are looking at it as a kind of direct comparison with the iPhone 1, where, yeah, all right, it was basic, but you knew there was more stuff coming, and it was going to come on that device. You weren't going to have to buy version 2 to get the cool stuff.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we only have scratched the surface of what we know about the Apple Watch and that we'll learn a lot more about it on March 9th. I keep hoping that there is more to it than what we've heard so far. There's so many unanswered questions for me, at least. You know, what is the upgrade or obsolescence path going to be for this thing? You know, the high-end watch is $10,000, well, I'm certainly out of the market for that, but I'd still want to know. You know, it's not a Rolex. We keep hearing talk about it's going to be priced like a Rolex, but it's not a Rolex. It's still a piece of technology. I understand it's solid gold and there's a certain cost that comes just from that fact, but, you know, technology is not going to be the heirloom. The version 1 of the Apple edition watch is not going to be what you pass on to your grandchildren and their grandchildren. So is it going to be swapping out the innards? Is there going to be some kind of upgrade path? Is there more functionality that the watches are going to have on day one, or are they really just merely, you know, a little more than another interface to your phone? I'm hoping we'll hear a lot more about it on March 9th. And I'm hoping that the reason we didn't hear much is either that they hadn't figured it out yet, or that they only wanted to tell us as much as they needed to because of, you know, whatever prompted them to announce it so soon, whether that was FCC regulations and they wanted to get ahead of what became public or what. But I'm looking forward to March 9th and what we'll learn there.
Yeah, I definitely want to learn more about it. One of the thoughts I've had, because, you know, there's been all this discussion of it being an heirloom item or not being an heirloom item. Once I've been pondering is the possibility that Apple just keeps the Apple Watch a dumb terminal, a semi-dumb terminal. And a lot of people seem to think that eventually it'll become its own self-contained thing, and maybe it will. But I think part of the problem there is if nothing else, battery life. You know, how are you going to have, it can be hard in an iPhone keeping decent battery life with LTE enabled, much less in a battery the size of a wrist, the tiny little wristwatch. So, and also, you know, you'd have the thing there. If the Apple Watch remains a dumb terminal, then the first generation Apple Watch presumably could keep working for a very long time, right? I mean, sure, you'd come out with upgrades. Maybe you have a faster processor, maybe you have especially better sensors. I think that'd be the main way to upgrade it. But, you know, So, the, you know, there would be incentive to upgrade, but maybe it's the kind of tech product where, you know, you could keep the first generation for 10 years and maybe it's showing a little age on it, but you don't absolutely have to buy the latest one.
Yeah, but, you know, what happens, we all know that batteries over time lose, or many cycles they go through, and they don't charge as well, they don't hold the charger as well. What happens when you have the Apple Watch for 2, 3, maybe even a year and a half, and all of a sudden that 24-hour charge time drops to 12 hours and 3 hours? Are there going to be battery replacements for it? I think that's something that's going to need to be addressed, too.
I think people expect that from a watch, that it's that you have to be able to replace the battery fairly easily. I mean, you know, we have battery-driven watches now that you take into your local jeweler and you swap in a new battery for $29 or something like that. So I have to think that it's going to be similarly easy. It may, you know, go to an Apple store instead of going to your jeweler. And the other thing is, this is a fashion accessory, and that's what really I think is going to drive a lot of the turnover in this thing. Sure, tech is going to be important to us and people who like us, but also, as cool as this thing looks, 2 years from now, it's going to look really fat and ugly compared to whatever they've come out with, because that's Apple's genius, is making things thinner and more stylish. So that may end up driving this thing. So you're not going to keep it for 10 years. You wouldn't keep it for 5 years, even if the battery continued to work, simply because you'd be sporting this big hunk of thing on your wrist that nobody's wearing anymore, because now they've worked not only with the iOS to increase battery life, but also they've got better battery technology in there. And so the people are walking around with a thinner one now that maybe is standalone. I'm not terribly concerned about the battery issues, because I think if you look at what Apple's been doing the last 4 or 5 years in terms of battery, they're spending a lot of time thinking about this. And I have to think that somewhere on the whiteboard, the watch figured into this, saying we need to get very serious about battery technology, because we're going to make smaller and smaller devices, even ones that are wearable, and people aren't going to put up with a watch that's this thick, you know, that they want something really thin, like an analog watch.
Well, come March 9th, you're going to get some colleagues who are battery techs, because apparently there's a big old intake of battery techs coming to Apple as well as, so again, that could be very true, more than you know. I'm really hopeful. I'd love to see them say something that's really going to shake me to the core and go, wow, I've got to have this device. I don't wear a watch, which I think is probably the big first stumbling block that they've got. I really would like them to do something nice with it, rather than just come out with something that everyone just poo-poos the following day, because it hasn't lived up to the rumors.
I'm looking at Josh's video, and I don't... Do you have a safe in that room, Josh? I'm wondering if you've been slowly converting your cash to gold ahead of this launch.
Actually, I may buy some, because I don't know if Apple uses as much gold as the Wall Street Journal seems to think it will. The price could be quite high, but I wouldn't keep it here where you could see it. No, it'd be buried in various locations.
So the prediction is a third, up to a third of world's gold for watches, for Apple watches.
Yeah, we did a little napkin, a little cocktail napkin math, the tidbits, and you know, there's a lot of guesses about how much gold would be in Apple Watch, but we decided that 2 ounces. seemed about, you know, sensible. I've had some people say, oh no, it's going to be a lot less than that. But, you know, for now, 2 ounces plus, you figure yield numbers, it's not going to be 100%. And then the Wall Street Journal says they're going to make 1 million editions a month, which seems like a lot to me for a watch that, you know, John Gruber seems to be convinced is going to cost $10,000. I'm not looking at the numbers right now, but yeah, but we came to the conclusion that with all the mine, the gold mined in a year, that Apple would be taking up 30% of all the gold mined every year, which would be a lot of gold. And I've had some questions about, well, what about recycled gold? What about maybe they bought a gold mine somewhere? Which is a good question. I don't really know where Apple is getting its gold. There's no clues. No one's really looked into it. And I'm kind of starting to poke into it, but I'm kind of out of my element there.
Franklin say that made me think that's another thing that Tim Cook's going to have to address with his, you know, supplier responsibility thing too, right?
Mm-hmm,
Sourcing gold is going to be a big deal moving forward, I guess, if this is really the case.
I mean, 2 ounces sounds a huge amount, I have to say. And if you go on the old wives' tale of all the gold in the world fits underneath the Eiffel Tower, that's and a million watches at 2 ounces. I don't think that works. No.
There's only something like, I think, 160,000 metric tons of gold that have ever been mined. Like, that's surface gold. And all of it's accounted for, like 52% of it's in jewelry, 2% of it's unaccounted for, some of it's being stored in vaults as, you know, store of wealth. And that was kind of the point of the article. I think some people missed the point and thought I was, you know, trying to do something with the gold market. No, I mean, really the point was there's a lot of really high numbers being thrown out there, and I'm a bit skeptical of them. Yeah. But I'll never underestimate Apple's ability to sell lots of an expensive product. Right. If anyone could sell a million $10,000 watches in a month, it would be Apple. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think they're mining asteroids.
That's it.
Could be. Maybe that's what Elon Musk.
Come to think of it, I was wondering why Tim Cook was walking around NASA last week when I was there.
There you go.
Forget the back.
Well, I just wanted to say I don't live far from Cupertino, and I have enormous trucks coming in full of straw. And I'm not sure exactly what that's for, but,
Chris, your mission is to find out where Apple's buried its gold.
I can't say.
Muller in the chat room says, forget the battery technicians, they've employed a load of alchemists.
There you go.
Apple gets its gold from Spectre, says Kelly.
They can turn aluminium into gold.
Mark Shepard, Tim Cook, the man with the Midas touch. And Kelly says, Q Shirley Bassett. Can't think of a better way of dealing with it, too, right? The tiger from Wales. A public iOS and OS 10 beta. Is that kind of like just responding to other people, sensible move, or are they just thinking, do you know what? None of the devs keep their trap shut anyway. We might as well just give it away.
It's scary to me. I thought the public beta for OS 10 was a little bit of a risk, but who is a less technical user of Apple products than the people who buy their phones? And, you know, I just wonder at the potential for things to go wrong on a phone with people who have no idea what they're doing. Click on the button. I mean, they couldn't even do over-the-air updates for the stable releases. What's going to happen on beta?
Yeah, particularly with devices that people use all the time and depend on. Yeah. I know that when we had the developers betas, and a lot of people in the tech business who, you know, write about this stuff, journalists, have become developers simply so they have access to the betas, because you have to write about this stuff as you go along. And some of my former colleagues would throw the first beta one on their phone. It's the only phone they had, and then would whinge about it for months, say, well, my phone doesn't work because I put the beta on there. And like, yeah. So as Chuck suggests, you put kind of regular people on there who don't understand what beta really means. And now they brick their phone because the beta isn't working the way it should. And suddenly they're up in arms. And I don't know that that's a particularly great thing for Apple. I could see maybe doing it on an iPad or an iPod Touch, but man, if it's your phone and it's not working, people are really going to be upset.
Well, here's the thing, though. Until Apple stops signing the iOS 8 releases, you can still presumably roll back, and maybe Apple will make that an officially supported thing. Maybe they'll make that a little easier to do. Also, I the rumor's been that iOS 9 is sort of a Snow Leopard release, right? Like fewer, less focus on more features, less whiz bangs, more, you know, getting things right, getting things stable, reducing the code base. Things like that. So there's a possibility, if that's the direction they're going, that iOS 9, even from the very first beta, may be more stable than iOS 8. And maybe the idea behind the public beta is they want to try to get it rock solid for everybody.
Well, possibly, but Snow Leopard actually had a lot of stuff under the hood that was new. So I think the perception that it was mostly like, we're not going to add new features, we're going to fix stuff that currently exists and get work better. But there's also a lot of infrastructure that they created going forward. So there was actually a bunch of new technology. It just wasn't right. Sort of that, hey, 500 new features. It was like, hey, 25 new features, unless you're somebody who works farther under the hood, who goes, wow, look at all the new stuff that they put in here. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's it. If iOS 9 really is just a let's make all this stuff work beautifully together and whatever the next version of OS 10 is, that would be great. But that may not necessarily be so.
The rampant cynic that I am, as the grumpy man of the network, the other thing I was thinking was this is actually probably almost a final release, and they're just using the opportunity to get the kind of PR out of it a little bit, because otherwise they're just going to exponentially increase calls to the Genius Bar, surely.
Well, I was wondering, will the Geniuses support beta? Like, if you walk in there and they look at your phone and you're running the public beta, do they just tell you to turn around, or will they actually help you?
That would be a nightmare, though. That would be an absolute PR nightmare for Apple. I can't see that they could do that.
Yeah, maybe it'd be one thing if you're running a developer beta and you presumably were supposed to know what you're doing. But, you know, with the public beta that anyone can get, I think at the very least they would maybe revert your phone to iOS 8.
Right.
That would seem fair to me.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing Kelly's put in here, she's used a Windows word. How dare you? Rollback. Maybe there'll be a rollback feature coming. I got to say, actually, the one thing that that Windows has done well since 7 is rollback. You know, did that work? No, everything's gone horribly wrong. Okay, we'll put it back. It's not a problem. That really did work well.
What does it say about your product if that's the best feature, though, that you can go back to the old version when it screws up?
Well, yeah, but I mean, how many times have you had an Apple product that supposedly got a native OS that screws everything up even on first release? Windows, iOS 8.
Yeah, at least Microsoft can admit it's screw-ups. Apple's still at the point where they presume everything is perfect, which is great until it's not.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's only a sensible thing because, you know, sometimes you don't know what an app's going to do, or certainly with the Windows environment, you've got Christ knows how many pieces of hardware it could come into contact with. I bought a clicker for a customer this week because I make videos for them that run like presentations, and they pause them using the space bar, and they love them. But this guy said, well, could we do, like, have we got a controller that'll pause? So I've had a bit of a hunt around on Amazon. I found a device that actually pauses. And I thought, well, I've got an old computer up there that's running a copy of XP. This is the worst case for them, that they take it out and plug it in. There's no disk comes with it. There's no software on the dongle or anything like that. And I plug it in, and it just works on XP, and you're kind of like, wow, that's pretty cool, because you'd have expected a XP with a device that was manufactured last month to have significant issues, but no, nothing. So we're balanced and fair on this network. Ish. There we go.
Ish.
Ish. A quick one. They've animated the London Eye in Maps. Have you been watching this, fellas?
No.
There it is, going round. Put it on the feed. They've animated that, and they've animated Big Ben's watch face as well, so it always tells the right time.
Wow.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. I mean, they've only done two things, and whether they can do anything else, I don't know, but I would have said that you've got to have something that moves fairly frequently, but I don't think it relates to the actual cars or anything, or the correct speed, because it does look rather fast. It looks a bit more Ferris wheel than London Eye. But it does go round. There it is. As we speak, that is what Maps is showing, the London Eye going round and round.
I thought it was pretty cool. The thing is, the problem with this particular panel is that you're suggesting that we think that there are countries other than the United States, and that we would pay attention to... Where are you again? At Arkansas?
At least you're not in Texas. Steady on.
Right. Sorry, you, Texas listeners.
But. Are you an American, sir? Hell no, I'm from Texas.
Yes.
That's no joke.
No, I did. I heard that on a plane. The girl was coming around with immigration forms, and she said, are you a U.S. citizen? And the guy said, hell no, I'm from Texas.
That explains so much.
Final Cut Pro. Final Cut 10 Pro 10 is being used for the Hollywood film Focus for editing. There it is. And Will Smith, I'm sure, loves it. But the question I've got Has FCPX managed to shed the its shit mantle? Because all the
maybe, pros, you know, I mean, you know, now that it's getting a little press, it's actually being used in a Hollywood film again, possibly. I'm not a film editor. I don't, you know, this isn't really my my bag. But you know, I kind of followed this controversy at first, and the thing I heard from people was that this could be a much better version, but it's missing things I need. And now that, and there was kind of a panic in Hollywood about it. A lot of people jumped ship to Avid, or you know, in some cases they might have stuck with Final Cut 7. But maybe it will become a standard again. You know, one of the things they said when editing Focus, they said, well, it just made it faster. It was just a faster workflow than the alternatives. So, I mean, if this is something that can help people work faster and save money, then I think it'll catch on.
Yeah. I use Final Cut on a daily basis, and I've got to say, I love it. I think it's great. And the amount of third-party plugins you can get in for it now are phenomenal. The stuff is really, really powerful.
Has it gotten back all the functionality that it lost when it first came out, Ewan?
And more. I hated 7. I thought FCP 7 was an absolute turd.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone else loved it, don't get me wrong, and I'm sure it's because they were used to it and they'd grown up through the FCP iterations. But my first editing software, really, for video was FCP 7. And there was days I would sit down and I couldn't open a document. And you're just like, what? I mean, there's little stuff with Final Cut 10, which is brilliant. So you don't have to import into a project. You can leave original file in location. And that's brilliant if you've got something that you want to amend. So you've paced something through on your film, and you've got a set number of slides in Keynote or something, and you've exported and put those in. All you've got to do is change the slides, re-export the movie, as long as you call it the same file name, and as long as you've got Final Cut shut down. Then when you open Final Cut up again, it's changed all the slides in the movie. You haven't got to sit and physically chop everything back in the same location. So that's brilliant. And then, but once in a while, especially if you've left Final Cut open, you'll get a modified file error, which they've got to deal with, because once you've got a modified file error, it is unearthly awful to get back. Most definitely.
Now, what about legacy content? Because I know that was a lot of the complaint when Final Cut 10 came out, is they couldn't import from a certain devices that they could before, and then they couldn't open up Final Cut 7 and previous Final Cut projects in 10. Have they made that better now?
My understanding is you still can't. So you can't take an FCP 7 and export it into any format that will allow 10 to open it. That's gone. All your legacy stuff is definitely finished there. In terms of devices, I can only speak that I haven't found anything I couldn't open. So it depends what you're trying to shove through it, but I've found nothing, and it takes external video cards and audio cards quite well as well. If you've got stuff that's importing through from those, I've got a FireWire audio card, and it records stuff onto that directly as well if I need it to for voiceover and stuff, which is good. So now I can't. I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. And I spend Pixel Film Studios have effectively got an intravenous line into my bank account. Bastards. I love the stuff that they do. There's some really, really cool stuff. But I've got really, I mean, I said the other week on the show, I think I've got, because I grew up as a 17-year-old shooting with film camera and being pretty poor, and, you know, I had to do reverse lens macro. If I wanted to do macro, I couldn't go and afford to buy a lens that did it, you know, and there was no post-production stuff for vignettes, so I used to use tights and stuff like that for vignettes, and use different strengths of tight for different strengths of vignette on the image. I'm kind of used to bouncing stuff around and getting the most out of applications. But the three applications I love the most are FCP 10 and Keynote, and the movie export feature on Keynote, and then Motion. Motion is easily the most underused, resourced and underrated application that there is in the Mac App Store for £34. I mean, it's $50, and you look at what you can do with it: active masking, animation, 3D modeling, superb. Love it to bits. There you go. FCP 10 is not shit anymore. Last story: iCloud for all. what else do you need to say?
And a free 1 gigabyte of storage for anybody, whether even if you don't own an Apple device.
I think that's a killer blow. And I think we were saying the other week that the user experience on this was always crap. Apple's online user experience, the cloud experience, was always dreadful. Now it's not. So you actually are going to be attracting people over from the Google sphere who will look at it and go, yeah, it's really cool.
For probably the worst thing still, and the one huge advantage Google still has, and I haven't used iWork for the web in a little bit, but the last time I used it, the collaboration features weren't great. You know, you couldn't really tell who was typing, who wasn't. You know, it was kind of difficult to manage, if not impossible to manage, you know, who had access to the document. And, you know, unless that's changed drastically overnight, that's still a huge advantage Google has. But it is cool that, you know, especially if you're in a work environment where, you know, it's all Windows PCs, but you have an iPad and you do a little bit of work on your iPad, then you can open up that, you know, like a numbers document on your Windows desktop, and you can, you know, if you need to move that into Excel or something, then you can.
Yeah, I think the only thing that that sometimes perhaps if you say, well, okay, I'm a Windows user predominantly, and you've got the Office 365 kind of element to that versus Numbers Pages and Keynote, there's lots of conversion. So if you want to bump out, say, an MOV file, the sad part of Windows is the fact that, you know, an MOV file is just an abhorrent thing to try and use in any Windows package, and an M4V and an MP4, you know, you end up having to go to a Windows media file, and the conversion time on that is a pain in the ass just to embed it in a PowerPoint. And that's where the online experience really could take over and give Apple some real push, because there is a much more open file structure to them, isn't there? You know, throw us your PPT, we'll deal with it. Throw us your movie, we'll deal with it.
Yes, it's a fantastic time to be, you know, an office worker with these devices, because, you know, you have iWork across, you know, any device you could want now. You have Office in any device you could want. You know, it's just a great time to be, you know, doing that sort of thing. And it's so far ahead. It's been a couple of years since I worked in a proper, you know, large office, but it's light years ahead of where it was just a couple of years ago.
It's light years ahead of where it was 12 months ago.
Yeah, I still wonder if Apple really knows what it wants to do with these things, though, because, you know, I think they've really done much promotion of it. I think the user experience is great. I think that people who have tried, myself included, you know, in my office, my Mac is a few versions behind the one at home, so rather than use Pages or Keynote on the Mac in my office, I use the iCloud version. Everything syncs up. It works perfectly. But I can't find anybody else who even knows about it. So, you know, I wonder what Apple's long-term goal is for that. Are they waiting till it gets out of beta? Are they going to push, you know, make a push for the enterprise through that? I'm not sure they know.
I don't think it's a high priority for them. I think, you know, the team there is just trying to keep it, you know, somewhat competitive with Google Docs and you know, the cloud office product. I don't think it's a huge high priority for Apple. You know, it seems like a lot of stuff lately has been just trying to rework a lot of Apple's software and try to modernize it. You know, we've seen that with Yosemite, seen that with iWork, you know, and so, you know, now we're seeing it with Photos, iPhotos. It seems like one of the big things Tim Cook has been doing is just kind of going across the board and, you know, just going around in a circle and trying to get everything up to speed, because things had really languished for a while. So, you know, I think it's probably going to be another year or two before we start seeing some real focus and seeing some real, you know, direction about where they're going. I think at this point it's more about just trying to get things up to speed.
Well, I think there is a niche for some of this stuff. If Apple is selling privacy as a feature, and I think they are, I think they're starting to talk more openly about privacy being a real issue and why people would want to go with an Apple product versus a Google product. Mm-hmm. That gives them a positioning point there, which says, look, this is your stuff, and we're not going to share it out. We're not going to mine your Google Docs for information that we can then use to sell advertising. And then on the other side, you've got Microsoft, which is saying, yeah, you know, if you buy a subscription, then you can get that experience here. And maybe Apple is positioning itself in the middle between not only is your stuff private, but we're not going to charge you for it, at least not for sort of regular users who don't need a ton of storage. If you want more storage, we'd be more than happy to sell that to you. But at the same time, this stuff is yours and yours alone.
I think the other thing that Apple has really struggled with, though, is their storage price. So if you're buying this as the kind of the drug sale into Apple, yes, it's great. It's really featured. It's really powerful. 1 gig, Mark Shepard in the chat room says, Mark, you know, a gig will go in a sneeze. So what am I going to buy extra then? And unless it's, you know, you're sitting thinking, well, okay, I've got to go out to my OneDrive now for Microsoft because it's cheaper than Apple, which is balking me on the storage costs. I mean, the storage costs are traditionally bad, it has to be said.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, it's only hadn't they gotten better with the storage costs though? So, I thought I remembered it being fairly inexpensive now that they lowered the price. I'm just trying to look it up now. But.
They lowered the price and they increased storage, but at the same time, everyone else lowered their price too. Yeah. So now Apple still looks kind of expensive in comparison.
Yeah, no. I mean,
I'm seeing on iCloud storage 20 gigabytes for 99¢ a month. Is that competitive?
No. Well, you're getting 100 gig at the moment, aren't you, for $20 a year? Is that right, on OneDrive?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I roll my own cloud storage, which is a whole nother topic.
I've got a terabyte with Dropbox, which cost me £70.
Yeah. I use OwnCloud, which is open source free. I use my own server space. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a wild west with server space at the moment and size. I mean, we've got our servers here that we use, and we've got an unlimited size server, so we can put as much as we want up in the cloud and get back afterwards. But the trouble then you've got is finding it.
If you're a 365 subscriber, and I know that's, you know, on the higher end of the price scale, you know, if you just look at storage, but I think you get unlimited OneDrive storage, right, with Office 365.
And there's a lot of stuff at the moment as well with OneDrive where, have you seen those little Lynx tablets? They're like, you know, $50 and you get this thing, it's got Windows 8 on it, runs like a desktop, and you get free Office 365 with it, and as a result, you get free unlimited storage with it as well as.
Yeah, it depends on which side you're on too. I mean, if you're a fan of Apple being a profitable company, Photos, they're going to sell a ton of that expensive storage because, you know, people are going to be opening up Photos and checking that box to put all their photos in iCloud photo library and suddenly realizing they need a lot more space. And you know Apple's going to make that process real easy to buy more storage from them.
Oh, sure.
Just put your thumb here.
Thumb here. Yeah. I was just about to say that very thing. And Apple hasn't got a good history of looking after your photos.
Right. In terms of storage, they already do that in the beta. When you pop that thing up, it will estimate how much storage you're going to need if you're going to put everything on the cloud. And in the beta, not yet, do they have a link saying, oh, and here's how you can buy it. But you know that's going to come when it says, oh, look, you're going to need 100 gigabytes, and right now your plan is only 5, so click here, and you get it. And then it just
paid
through Apple ID.
Go on, Adam.
I said, yeah, like Chris was saying, and we'll upgrade you, no problem. Here you go.
Yeah. Put your thumb here.
And it'll be so seamless and easily, you won't even realize until it's too late.
For an undisclosed amount.
No, I mean, they'll still say up front, but you're just going to go, yeah, I want access to all my photos. Come on. Everywhere? Are you kidding? I don't care.
It could be worse. Our Fire TV, my infant son keeps grabbing the remote and mashing buttons and ends up buying all kinds of things. He signed us up for a year of Amazon Prime. He rented, like, a few movies. Thankfully, Amazon makes it really easy to cancel things, and I finally got smart turn on parental controls. But
at least that's your excuse, Josh, and you're sticking to it.
Exactly. I told my wife the same thing. Honey, I have no idea how that got on there. I think the cat must have stepped on the remote.
Oh, no, she watched him do it. He'll pick the thing up 5 seconds later. Bye.
I honestly have no interest in nude cheerleaders at spring break, darling. Honest.
Oh, you don't go to Amazon for that.
But having said that, the topless volleyball champions are well worth the money. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2. I went down to see them the other week, and we had a fantastic lunch. Thank you very much to them for taking me out to an absolutely lovely Indian restaurant in the heart of Shoreditch. We got loads of stuff happening with them in the future. We've got a real close tie-up. We're going to carry on as we are with all of the hosting and looking after BTN. They're going to help us do our streaming from now on, so we're getting away from live stream, and we're going to be embedding our own stream. We're going to be running our own RTMP server using Nginx, and they're going to give us a whole new server just to do that. So we won't be sharing it with the existing dedicated server we've got. We're going to get a whole new service that does nothing but stream out BTN. So we should be crystal clear, and it should be dead easy to put anywhere you like on any device, and it'll absolutely be brilliant. So thanks to UK2. Please support them, because they really are supporting us, and you'll see massive changes coming in the next few weeks at BTN, a lot of which have been facilitated by UK2. But you must use the click-through. One of the things that they talked about with us when we went down was, we're getting a lot of anecdotal evidence that you're sending us people, but the problem is those people are coming through because they tweeted out that, I bought a lovely domain through UK2, thanks at British Tech. And they said, but those people haven't come through on the tracking link. They've bought it elsewhere. So if you can, I mean, it says tracking link, but don't think that that's tracking where you go. That's tracking that we sent you. So even if you just want to sign into your account, get into the habit of going to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors and clicking on the UK2 logo. You can set that up as a shortcut for when you want to log into UK2 in your bookmarks. We'll still get the tracking link credit for that. So please make sure you use the link, and make sure you use the offer codes, because if you don't, you're losing a fortune. Tons coming with UK2 though, tons coming, so keep an eye out. There's going to be some competitions each month as well with them. And I want to say thanks to all the beta testers as well, because we've got a new website that's going to drop out in the next few weeks, and we've got I think about a dozen beta testers have been out doing stuff. They've been throwing stuff back. We actually got some proper beta testers rather than just one went, yeah, it's all right. And there's been loads of reports going back to Paul, and he's had to sit and wade through them all. So they've made a real difference. Thank you ever so much to those people. And Wirecast is the software that we use to do all the streaming to you. Telestream out that for us, and they'll give that to us. They gave us $2,000 worth of streaming software free of charge, just so that we could come out to you guys. So please support them as well as. And you've got a fantastic piece of software from telestream.net that you can buy. ScreenFlow, it's absolutely brilliant for your screen capture needs. Does audio as well as, and it'll capture the full screen right the way up to, if you've got the 5K screen, it'll capture the 5K and it'll crunch it out as a uncompressed MOV that'll probably be at 200 gigabytes, but it'll do it. Brilliant piece of software, so ScreenFlow, go and check them out too. They're on the sponsors page, britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors. And the bash is coming up, yes. 4th of July, 3rd for the curry, 4th for the bash, and we've still got a couple of tickets, not many left over, for the Sunday What I Know Day. So we're going to have a few people doing a little kind of, here's what I know, here's what I can do, come and have a watch, and that's at my house. So we've only got 30 spots for that, otherwise we're going to be absolutely overloaded. But the main bash is Saturday the 4th of July. It's going to be great fun from 11 o'clock in Water Orton. It'll be a lovely sunny day. We'll have loads of fun and games. All the family are going to be there. Under 16s come in free of charge. £20 gets you absolutely everything. So don't be turning up with a box of beers in your hands, because you'll be taking them home with you, because the £20 buys all your food and beer and wine, and it gets you everything that you need for the day. Pays for the hire of the hall. There is no further expense. You just need to physically get there. Hotel Over the Road is offering hotel rooms. You can get two people in there for two nights for £58 still at the moment. So get booking. All right. You'll enjoy it. I love it.
You and you have a band for that yet?
No, we don't. And I would, we had a band a couple of years ago. James Hart came down with Simon Toon, and they played some tracks, which were really good fun. I wrote a song for the bash called Downloads by Monday. And that was a load of fun. And I'm sorry that we haven't had a kind of a little band again since. So if you want to come over, mate, I'll pay for the stage, and I can get you equipment. You don't need to bring equipment. I can get you oodles of guitars and that kind of stuff. So come over.
Chris, we may have to talk later.
No, possibly.
Yeah, do it. Get the Apple corporate jet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. After I finish washing it.
Yeah, no. Jesus, the man, the world is just open for you, Mr. Breen.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Get Tim over. Greeny can apologize in person. Time for a cool thing. Mr. Breen, did you bring a cool thing for us?
I did. I have been populating my office with these things. Speaking of Amazon, I go there a bunch, and they occasionally put these things on sale. I'm holding up to the camera. This is the Anchor 4 USB hub. They also make a 60 watt, and I use this all the time because I have so many devices scattered around my house that plug into USB and need to be powered. I've got about four of these now scattered in. I've got one in the kitchen, I've got one in the bedroom, I've got a couple of them in my office. And instead of trying to find that outlet and then plug in the bulky charger that blocks a couple of positions on the power strip, I just plug this thing in, jack in an iOS device or any other USB device that needs power, and I'm good to go. And they charge fast, they don't heat up, and it's good. Usually they're about, this one is 35 watt, I think, and it goes for around $20 on Amazon. Otherwise, if you want a 6-port 60 watt, I think that's around $40,
$45. All right. Brilliant. Brilliant. Good pick. Like that one. Mr. Christensen, what do you have for us?
I am going to pick my new game obsession, which came out. And oddly enough, I guess this is relevant to what was going on yesterday over on the Twitters with the llamas, because my pick is a game called Alto's Adventure, which is a snowboarding style endless runner that just has beautiful, beautiful artwork and graphics. The game is done by built by Snowman. And they used a great designer on this, Harry Nesbitt. And it's absolutely just a lot of fun. And it's one of those endless runner styles. But the concept here is you're, I guess, in the mountains. I don't know if it's the Alps or where it is. Your llamas have escaped, and you're trying to snowboard to catch your llamas. You do tricks and flips, and the more tricks you do, the scar on your little snowboarder starts to grow, meaning that you're gaining more speed, and then you can do bigger and larger tricks, and you can level up and get new characters, and it's one of these, there's no in-app purchase, nothing like that, so you just buy the game and play till your heart's content, and it's ton of fun.
Thanks so much. Yeah, those constant runner things, I like the skiing ones, but like Temple Run, I never got into Temple Run. It always seemed like I was too old to play it. I couldn't react fast enough.
Yeah, yeah. What I really like about this one is visuals are great, and the weather, the weather sort of changes in cycles, so it's always a little bit different. The lighting is gorgeous and beautiful, and I really, if you've listened to me on the show before, a lot of my picks, I pick for the artwork, and this has the artwork. Plus, just the gameplay is tons of fun.
Cool, so. Mate. Nice one. Good pick. Chuck, what do you have for us?
I'm so glad that we talked a lot about the Apple Watch and the Pebble, because I'm choosing something that's not a smartwatch, but may replace one for you, or maybe provide a good alternative. And it's the, I'm going to hold it up here, it's the Garmin Vivo Smart, which is a fitness band with a lot of smartwatch features. Including a couple that Apple executives made a big deal of touting when they were talking about the Apple Watch. One is that it will remind you to get moving if it senses you've been inactive too long. So it gives you a little vibration, very subtle. Nobody else will hear it, but it's pretty much unmistakable for the wearer, and it'll just tell you to move. And so if you've been, sitting for an hour or so and I've gotten the notification while we're doing the podcast, in fact, it reminds you to just get up. And if you walk around for a few minutes, then it'll reset that notification. It does all the fitness tracker things that you'd expect. It tells you how many steps you've traveled. It sets a goal for you based on your previous day's number of steps. So it's dynamic and it adapts to you. It's not a set in stone goal that, may not be right for you. Gives you a nice notification when you read your goal, which little 8-bit fireworks go off, which I think is kind of cool and a little bit motivational to me as well. Tells you how many steps you have until you reach your goal, or how many steps over your goal you've gone, how many miles you've reached, how many calories you've burned. So all the good fitness tracker type things. And it also gives you notifications from your iPhone or Android device. So you can actually read whatever will come in on your notification screen will appear on the fitness band. completely invisible when it's off, but it's nice and readable when it's on. The only kind of weird thing is that in order to read it, you sort of have to twist your wrist a little bit to read longer messages. So you can see emails that came in. You can decide whether or not they're worth pulling your phone out to respond to. You know, if I use Dark Sky, the app that tells the weather. So if it's going to start raining soon, I'll get the notification on my wrist for that as well. Any texts that come in, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, lots of smartphone features without necessarily being a smartphone. The nice thing is that you don't have to wait till April to get these features if that's what you want and you don't need a full-blown Apple Watch. And it's also about half the cost of an Apple Watch, so $170 instead of $340. And I did a review of it over at Macworld, so I can provide the link in for the show notes later. But I think it's a great idea. It's a smart way, if you'll excuse the pun, for Garmin to differentiate itself from all the smart watches that are coming out. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, no, good. Garmin's got a good, that you know, the GPS stuff with that is going to work really, really well as well.
Yeah.
Josh, what do you have for us? Cool thing?
Yeah, the thing I have is a little different. Over, this is actually a little Britain-specific, although it does affect Americans somewhat, good. Too. There was a court ruling recently that declared that a lot of the GCHQ's data collection methods were illegal. And so now this group, Privacy International, is actually, they're taking information from people so you can find out if you're spied on by this GCHQ or possibly spied on by the NSA, which was then shared with the GCHQ. So, and they will ask, they'll try to find out if you were spied on, and they'll ask for the data to be deleted, at least in the UK, if you were. So if you go to privacyinternational.org/illegalspying, and you put your information in there, you'll be entered into the pool that they're planning to submit. Now, they warned this may take a few years because nothing like this has ever happened before in this massive a scale. So you could be waiting a while, but presumably when it's all said and done, you'll find out if you were spied on or not, and if you were, hopefully your information will be deleted.
Yeah, I want to know what they held about me because I've lost the password to a few of those sites. No, okay. Fair enough.
Now, here in the U.S., you don't need an app. You know, we just have a sticker that says yes, and you just slap that on your phone.
I don't know if you guys have ever heard of a guy called Ben Goldacre. He's a British doctor, Dr. Ben Goldacre, and he writes for a column for The Guardian. And I was reading an article that he'd written when the first lot of spying came out. And he said, right, okay, imagine they have an algorithm which spies, and it's 90% effective, and I think we're probably being generous in saying it's 90% effective. And he just broke down all the numbers of how many terrorists would get away even if it was 90% effective with all the data that they got. He said, like, compared to how much they've actually got and they can't deal with if they've even managed to keep it safely. Government just doesn't seem to run that efficiently. My cool thing is the Kit Glass desktop table shelf stand. And you look at this and you go, okay, well, it's a monitor riser, so that's all there is to it. Well, it's a nice one. It's a glass one, which helps, so you can see the stuff that's underneath it, and you can store a bit more crap underneath it. But what is nice about it is it's got a USB 2 hub in it. So you can do data in on the micro USB, and then you've got four USB 2s out from it that will relate back through. So you can expand the hub that you've got on your monitor even further if you really want to. And it carries a lot of stuff. And the reason I bought it was it's wide enough to take my 21.9 LG monitor, the widescreen one. It looks good. And if you've got a Thunderbolt monitor, it fits as well as. So again, you can make your ports more accessible, just like the Jimian did last week. And just to keep update, because we've had a couple of emails about this saying, how's it going with Uber in Birmingham? You may not know, but we got Uber 3 weeks ago in Birmingham. And every day I've been starting the application to see where the Uber cars are in Birmingham. And I've tried it at the airport and the middle of Birmingham. I've tried it here. And that was this morning. So there you go. Birmingham loves Uber. All cars are in use. That hasn't changed for 3 weeks. So Uber is allegedly in Birmingham. Their one car is currently in use, however it would seem, and has been for 3 weeks. He's probably lost. Yeah. Where can we get a hold of you then? Well, Mr. Breen, there's no point, is there?
No.
Because we'll ask where you're going to be, and you go, I can't tell you.
I'm still going to maintain my regular blog, which is chrisbreen.com. I will not be writing about tech in any way, shape, or form, but if you've been reading my blog anyway, I rarely talk about tech on there. It's mostly about music, so I'll continue doing that.
Good.
I will continue my Twitter presence at Body of Breen, and actually, there won't be a huge change there either because I rarely tweet about tech. It's mostly taking pictures at the beach in the morning and then tweeting them out to people who are on the subway in New York so they can hate me.
No, we've got quite a few. I know of quite a few Apple geniuses who listen to the podcast, and they're all still on Twitter, so Apple's not that draconian.
No.
We wish you every success, sir.
Thank you very much.
It must be daunting to just go out of such a stable job within Macworld as it was then, and to now fly out into pastures new in Apple.
Into this little startup, yeah. It's it's quite a leap, and it requires that I'm going to have to set an alarm and get up in the morning, which is unusual for me. Yeah, it's a huge change. It's absolutely a huge change, but it's kind of nice this late in my career to take on a new challenge like this, so I'm really looking forward to it. As much as I loved everything I was doing before, this is going to be fun, and I think it's a good thing.
When you say taking on a challenge, I don't want to pry, and I don't want you to say anything you don't want to, but is it kind of like a whole new thing that you're taking on, or are you fitting in with an existing activity or team?
Oh, yeah. That was incredibly vague, and that was the intent.
Okay, right, fair enough.
Hey, Chris, I don't want to scare you or anything, but I hear that company's doomed.
And in capital letters, doomed. Yes. And it has more than two O's in it, too. So they're really doomed.
Excellent. Good man. Best of luck. Break a leg.
Thank you.
And I hope I get to come out and have lunch with you in the cafe once, because I've done the cafe once. I've got to do it again.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that people, after they say, what are you going to do? And I say, yeah. The second thing is, I want to have lunch there. And it's okay, I guess. I don't know. Probably. I think they let me do that. I'm not sure.
You're going to have lunch there and be able to look at your phone when it buzzes.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I couldn't. Don't get your phone out, otherwise we'll all be killed.
Right.
Adam, where are you, sir?
You can find me over at maccast.com or maccast on iTunes. Also, I do the iOS show with Michael Johnston and Jeff Gimmett at theiosshow.com, and maccast on Twitter and pretty much every other social media place that you like to hang out.
Excellent, Moose. Kelly's frantically asking in the chat room if Chris can say his job title. Mate, that's what we've been doing for the last hour and a half. Still not nowhere.
Piano player.
It will be announced at the keynote, right? That's what the whole thing's for.
Yeah, sure.
We've done everything.
Yeah, when you see me step out on stage March 9th, that should give you it.
Yeah. We've done everything short of putting battery electrodes on Chris's testicles, and we still got nothing. Chuck, where are you, sir?
Oh, most of the time these days I'm over at Macworld, macworld.com. On Twitter, you can find me at Chuck Latornis. I'm also, things that don't fit in with Macworld, I throw over on my 20-year-old site now, randomaccess.com, two M's, two C's, two S's. And I truly intend one day to write again for my open beta site that I call the intersection between high-tech now on high adventure. It's called trailcamper.com.
Excellent, mate. Good stuff. And last but not least, my name is Lee Josh. Where are you, sir?
I'm the managing editor of Tidbits, so you can find all my stuff over there at tidbits.com. I wrote a book about iOS 8 and Apple TV. You can find those at takecontrolbooks.com, and you can subscribe to my ramblings on Twitter at jcenters, jcenters.
Good man, thank you. Mullerbike says, Ewan could take his Windows phone into the Apple Cafe. Been there, done that, mate. I took my Windows phone to Macworld. Yeah. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again this evening with The Big Show. We've got Kelly, Jeff, Doc Lee, and Jackie Hearn joining us. And we'll be back with The Mac Show next week as normal. So have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.